This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Water is the most abundant substance on Earth, yet only a very small amount of fresh water is available for consumption. Hence, humanity's long history of trying to move it, control it, and use it. Nowhere is this more apparent than in the arid West, where the Colorado River distributes more water to users than any other river system in the world. Every drop of it, and then some, has already been promised to someone somewhere. In the second part of our series on water in the West, NPR's Elizabeth Arnold reports on the hardest working river in the West.
What do a glass of water in Los Angeles, a sprinkler on a Phoenix golf course, a toilet in Denver, and a theme park in Las Vegas have in common? Well, it's likely at least half of the water comes from the same place, the Colorado River.
Now, when you think about it, the Colorado River probably does more work of more different kinds than any in the United States.
Charles Wilkinson is a professor of law at the University of Colorado, who's written extensively on water and the West.
And it needs to be said that we use all of it up.
25 million people in 7 western states and Mexico rely on the flow of this river. 30 million depend on electricity from the hydropower it generates. So much so that what starts as a trickle of snowmelt in Wyoming's Wind River Range, joining tributaries and building to a force that carves the Grand Canyon, rarely reaches its natural destination in the Sea of Cortez. 10 major dams and 80 major diversions leave nothing but a salt flat at its mouth. Native Americans were the first to put the Colorado to use, followed by the Mormons and homesteaders from the east, eager to turn the desert green. Today, a vast labyrinth of dams, ditches, pumps, and pipelines does just that, making it possible for people who may never lay eyes on the river to depend on it every time they turn on the tap, flick on the lights, or water their lawn.
How, you ask? From water, imported water. So engineers have designed an ingenious way to import water from the mighty Colorado River to quench the thirst of this area's growing population. So now,
the history of the Colorado is as colorful as it is controversial. In 1869, the man who first scouted it, Major John Wesley Powell, said there is not sufficient water to irrigate all the lands which could be irrigated. But opinions differed widely over the river's potential. Historian William DeBuys says, ironically, it was flooding from the development of California's Imperial Valley that inspired the next 30 years of massive and costly dam and diversion projects.
The reverberations of that great flood that filled the Salton Sink shook their way into the creation of the hydraulic society that we have down there today. They led, in a sense, to the construction of Boulder, now Hoover Dam, and they led to the California Aqueduct, and they led to the All-American Canal. They led to the plumbing of the Colorado River.
Floyd Dominey presided over the plumbing. He was the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation during the era of the big dams. His blueprint was what came to be known as the Law of the River, a 1922 compact that split the states into an upper and lower basin. It was an insurance policy for the upper basin states, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico, who worried that the faster-growing lower basin states, California, Nevada, and Arizona, would use more water and win legal claim to it. Because the flow fluctuated widely from year to year, Dominey fought long and hard for the last and most contested of the big dams, Glen Canyon.
Well, you've got to recognize that the law of the river puts the upper basin in a straitjacket. They can't develop their share of the water unless they have a huge sponge somewhere so that you can capture the 30 million acre foot years to balance the 6 million acre foot years. And all the diversions in Colorado and Utah and Wyoming, the same thing is true. A Glen Canyon Dam is absolutely essential to provide that steady flow of water from the good to the bad years.
This is one of the bad years. It's 100 degrees here at the edge of Lake Powell, the reservoir created by the Glen Canyon Dam. There's a white bathtub ring around it because it's dropped nearly 100 feet, a record low. Still, a fountain lavishly splashes water at the entrance to the concrete visitor's center perched atop the dam. It's as audacious a statement as the emerald green golf course in the distance, an unlikely oasis in the red rocks, courtesy of the Colorado River. It's a statement about control, embodied in the massive white wall of concrete stretching across the canyon, arching back against the river. 200 miles of Lake Powell lies motionless behind it. Only so much water is let out at a time. Rusty Gaddis has been the deputy manager here for 11 years. His dad helped build it, and his grandmother worked at Hoover.
Every drop of water that's in Lake Powell that gets released to the Colorado is obligated to somebody. There is no extra water. If you're watering your grass in Phoenix right now, you have Lake Powell to thank.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Colorado Visitor Center.
All right. Right now, we're going to go down 528 feet down to the bottom of the dam. That's 53 stories or half the size of the Empire State Building.
The guide tells us 100 million tons of concrete holds the river back, enough to pave a four-lane highway from Phoenix to Chicago. The dam is the physical manifestation of the Colorado River Compact, a feat of engineering and of cooperation between the states. There's just one problem. When the deal was worked out, it was a high water year. The amount of water in the river was off by several million acre feet, a huge overestimate. Add to that a five-year drought, and the Colorado is working overtime. It's overpromised, overcommitted, and overdrawn. Attorney Bill Swan is right in the middle of the tension that creates. He's helped negotiate agreements between the states over water for more than 30 years. He says currently the strain is between Colorado and California.
Colorado probably produces on average about 70% of the water in the whole river. But Colorado has an entitlement to the river that is smaller than the state of California. So California contributes no water to the river, and Colorado knows that. So if you're Colorado and you think it's kind of your river, you don't like the fact that you provide most of the water to a state down below that doesn't produce anything to contribute to the river, but it has more of an entitlement than you do. It just doesn't make you feel good.
So Colorado is thinking about reviving the era of big projects with a massive diversion called the Big Straw, sucking up the water before it ever reaches California, pumping it east 200 miles up and over the Rocky Mountains to the densely populated Front Range. Two other huge pipeline projects like this are being talked about in Arizona and Utah. All three, says Charles Wilkinson, are estimated to divert some 50,000 acre-feet of water a year.
Now, how much water is that? An acre foot is the amount of water that floods a football field to the depth of 1 foot. Imagine a football field with retaining walls around it that would hold water. 50,000 acre feet would be pushing 10 miles high, a column of water the size of a football field, and that's every year. And a good slug of that water, by the way, a third of it, a quarter of it, maybe a half of it, will just go for lawns.
Wilkinson says it would be an incredible subsidy for an incredible waste. But that depends on your point of view. A ripple on the Colorado River may mean recreation for a kayaker, but it may also mean safe drinking water for a public school system in San Diego, or a successful crop of alfalfa for a farmer in Yuma. 300 miles to the south of Glen Canyon Dam, on the outskirts of Phoenix, Colorado River water flows in a concrete canal under a four-lane highway. It's the main artery of the Central Arizona Project, and the barely perceptible current it carries is the lifeblood of housing developments, golf resorts, and business parks that sprawl in every direction here. Still surprisingly, the urban West is not the biggest user of Colorado River water. Attorney Bill Swan says, like it or not, it's farming.
And you have a tendency to say as a society, well, are they doing a good job with that water? I mean, do we as a society value alfalfa? What the hell is alfalfa? So you end up with this struggle of values and priorities where somebody will say, oh, gee, urban uses for industry and homes and mothers and children and schools is so much of a higher value than growing crops, especially out in the hot desert.
But water law sides with the first one who laid claim to it. And despite the escalating needs of the urban West, agriculture has the most powerful legal right to the Colorado's water.
So it isn't easy to just go in and say, you know, times have changed. We're going to reallocate some of this precious resource, maybe the most precious resource in the West. We're just going to reallocate it from those who have it to those who need it.
The dispute over the distribution of the Colorado River embodies critical issues in the region. The over-appropriation of water and the rapidly changing face of the West, compounded by population growth and ecological needs. It's estimated an acre of Colorado farmland goes into development every 4 minutes. There are those who believe market forces will solve the problem, allowing farmers to sell water to cities, for example. There are those who believe that a continuation of the dam era, bigger, bolder, more efficient water projects are the answer. And there are even those who believe the Colorado River should simply be set free, the Glen Canyon Dam torn down. Bruce Babbitt is a former governor of Arizona and a former interior secretary. After a lifetime of wrestling with water disputes, he still believes there's enough to accommodate all these views. If the same leap of imagination that led the first settlers to harness the river is applied.
We've demonstrated our capacity to manage and alter natural systems to our heart's content. If we can build Hoover Dam and Glen Canyon and Grand Coulee and all these gigantic canals, we certainly have the capacity to revisit the system and to say we'd like to set up markets to reallocate water more efficiently and make a public commitment to get some of that water back in these rivers so that we can say to our children, you know, the rivers still run to the sea. It's an important part of the West.
But an underlying question still remains. What's the true cost of water in the West and the consequences for future generations of promising more water than a river can possibly deliver? The answer may determine the fate of the Colorado and all those who've come to rely on it. Elizabeth Arnold, NPR News.